All right, it's a little after 10. Call the ADA board meeting for 2014, August 11th order. Corinne, would you do the roll call for the board members, please?
Mr. Wilkin.
Present.
Deputy Commissioner Pawlowski.
Present.
Ms. Nygaard.
Present.
Mr. Hughes. Commissioner Bell.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Bruce.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Would you please do the staff in public?
Okay, I'm going to point to you in the boardroom so we can, and please state your name and what organization with, as loud as you can, please. Start with you.
Sarah Boyce, MWH.
Amy Brown, MWH.
Glenn Lindgren, MWH.
Chris Brown, MWH.
Rick Adcock, MWH.
Miranda Studstill, Architect.
Ted Leonard, ADA.
Carson Rodvick, ADA.
Michael Lamb, ADA. Tom Erickson, ADA.
Nick Simoniak, ADA.
Mark Davis, ADA.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Jim Hemsap, ADA.
Chris Anderson, ADA.
Jennifer Helbane, ADA.
Jerry Judea, Department of Law.
Dave Mansky, Principal Julian.
Sherry Peterson, ADA. Frank Kempinen, ADA. Okay, we're going to do a roll call on the phone. Please state your name and organization loud and clear, with please.
This is Catherine Eldemar, and I'm with Representative Doug Isaacson's office.
And this is Mayor Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks North Suburb. Gene Reynolds, TIC.
Can we get those two again, one at a time?
After you, ma'am.
Amy Louse, MWH.
Dean Reynolds, TIC.
Larry Balasak, Air Products and Chemicals.
Dennis Thompson, Mississippi Native Association.
Chris Clark with HDR.
Any other public on the phone?
All right, thanks, Brent. Next up, item number 4 is our agenda. I'll need a motion to approve.
Chair,
go ahead.
Can I add one agenda item, executive session on the Interior Energy Project?
That's the executive session.
Right now, we just have it as an Interior Energy Project.
So you want to add after executive session IEP?
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair. I guess we didn't. Never mind.
All right.
Just clarify that it's Interior Energy Project.
All right. The agenda has been moved. The second the objection. It's approved. Item number 5 is public comments. Please limit, if there is any public comments, please limit it to 3 minutes per person and state your name and if you're affiliated with any organization. Is there anybody?
Mr. Chair, this is Catherine Eldemar, and I would like to have a moment to address the body, please.
Okay, Catherine, could you state your name again and who you're with?
Certainly. Good morning. Chair Cruz and ADA Board, my name is Catherine Eldemar, and I am the committee aide for the State House of Representatives Special Committee on Energy, Representative Doug Isaacson, co-chair. I'd like to begin with thanking ADA for participating via teleconference and allowing some brief comments prior to proceeding with its agenda. My comments will be limited to the Interior Energy Project and subsequent executive session, where it is my understanding that agreement terms for the Interior Energy Project are slated for discussion or possible final decision. ADA is tasked with significant Interior Energy Project responsibilities. The Interior Energy Project is propped up by the significant resources of the state to deliver Alaskan gas for use by Alaskans at a rate not to exceed $15 per 1,000 cubic feet to the meter in Fairbanks and North Pole. The Interior Energy Project commences with natural gas conditioning and liquefaction on the North Slope. From there, it is slated for transportation to Fairbanks and North Pole, where it is stored, regasified, and then distributed ultimately for ratepayer consumption, keeping their homes and businesses warm. The anticipated $15 price does not include the price of converting homes, businesses, and industry from oil to gas usage. In order to be competitive with other currently available heating fuels, which are already being used and distributed, this project must be managed with such scrutiny that the $15 price per 1,000 cubic feet is perfected. The goal can be achieved with a diligent and professional ADA team working to fulfill its duty to Alaskans. There are many details to attend to in order for this project to work. ADA's role is significant. As ADA proceeds to consider any proposed contractual agreements on behalf of Alaskans, I ask each of you to please make certain Alaska's finite gas resources do in fact provide Alaskans with reliable and reasonably priced gas at or less than the $15. Alaskans are depending on successful negotiations of terms so Alaskan gas is available for Alaskans to use at the forecasted price. While this goal has been expressly stated by the governor for the state of Alaska, as well as the legislature, it is ultimately ADA's negotiations which will definitively impact Alaskan ratepayers, communities, and Alaska for many years to come. For the present and future well-being of Alaskans, communities, and Alaska, I wish you the very best in your negotiations and endeavors as you proceed with the Interior Energy Project. And our door is always open here at Representative Isaacson's office if there's anything else that we can do to assist to make this a successful project. So I thank you for your time. I appreciate the opportunity to address the body.
Thank you. Are there any questions from board members? Michael?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Catherine, just for the record and for the public, I want to be clear that the board does not make decisions in executive session. We have discussions around strategy, and any contractual decisions will be made in open session by this board.
Excellent. I appreciate that. The other question I might have, and I've reviewed the ADA site as well as the agenda, it looks like there might be some documents that will be presented at the meeting. If they are, could you make those available online so that we can download them and read them as you're discussing them, please?
The only document that will be out in public will be the presentation that MWH has today.
Is that online?
We just received it, so.
I've got it here on Flash Drive. I'm going to find out if Sherry's putting it online. She usually makes a copy and puts it online at the same time that we're doing this.
We'll do our best to get that online for you, Captain.
We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Is there anybody else from the public like to testify?
Yes, this is Mayor Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks North Suburb.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Mayor Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks North Suburb, if I may. Sounds like I was just unmuted.
Yes, no, go ahead.
First, I want to thank ADA executive staff for accepting the invite and coming to Fairbanks to give an update on IEP and answer questions to the public. Certainly hope that ADA board and ADA executive staff are able to continue that. There was discussion of continuing meetings where the residents of the area, the interior, can certainly ask questions and hear up-to-date information. But as I continue to hear from residents, they're concerned and I'm concerned that we're moving towards the third quarter of 2016 and we may have a later date, if it's earlier than that, or first gas to Fairbanks from the project. I think that would be an incredibly good message, but I'm concerned that as we slide almost a year now, we're in third quarter of 2016, and I certainly hope that the ADA board decisions take some actions to try to shorten that timeline. I'm concerned about the price at the meter, and that's where we talk about that $15 per MMBTU. And, you know, there has been modeling of the lowest cost of natural gas energy that's been presented to ADA. And that revolves around how the ADA board determines utilizing the funding in SB 23 to make sure that gas to the residents to the meter is at that $15 per MCF or MMBTU, or at lowest cost possible, as we see the timeline creep on in the future. Certainly hope that the gas pricing is as close to $15 as AIDA can make those decisions. I understand that, those are the goals then and aims that were discussed as this project came together. And, of course, with $115 million bond authorization, that's at market rates. When, if it's 4 or 5% interest in 30 years, that incredibly impacts what our residents have to pay as we go along. The CEPS money is up to 3% interest plus the $57.5 million in capital funds. That's the low-cost money. And I just certainly hope that low-cost money is able to be put into, at some extent, to the distribution systems that we're looking at that will require financing as opposed to just up at MWH's LNG plant on the North Slope. So as we continue to hear how this project's going, your agenda looks like under a new business, you have a public update on the Interior Energy Project, and you may be having, it looks like if the board moves, an executive session on IEP. So I just ask that this board it seriously considers, and I'm sure you will, because that's your duty, to ensure that we're getting the lowest price gas. Therefore, how the financing, how the different buckets of money are being distributed, are being utilized for this project. Again, residents are getting concerned. I hear it. I suspect you hear it also. And that concludes my comments, except for one. I hear that my friend Michael Lamb is in the audience, so I chose to use the word buckets, and I think he'll understand that. So with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Are there any questions from board members?
If I might. Mayor, thanks for being there. Continue to push on our project. I would just comment on the timeline issue and assure you that this group and this board is pedaling as fast as we can. And but at least from one board member's standpoint, that being mine, I'm not going to hurry to a project that isn't correct. And that's where we are today. We have lots to do, and I would rather take another year to get it right than spend 20 years doing it wrong. So I've told this board, and I've been very public about it, while my neighbors want gas as soon as possible and they see the pipe going in the ground, I say to them, we're working as hard as we can to get it to you as quickly as possible, and at the lowest cost possible, but we're not going to do it in a hurry and suffer for bad decisions made today for the next generation. So thank you for being there, leaning on us, pushing on us. But we're all in this hand in hand, and I live it, not like you do, but I'm very much aware of the need. And thanks again for being there.
Thank you very much, Board Member Wilkin, and I do appreciate that as the board not only values and determines what is the best project, there are all eyes on it, and I have faith that the board will be as best informed as it can be with all the different choices that it has before us, and I'll take your advice, Gary, that you'll be making the right decision. Thank you.
Is there any other board member comments or questions? Is there any more from the public who would like to comment? Any more from the public? All right, the public comment section is now closed. Next item up on the agenda is under new business. We have eligibility resolution number ER14-01. With Alaska Beverage Group, LLC. I need someone to move the resolution to get it on the table for us.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the resolution.
Thank you.
Well, second.
Thank you. Ted, discussion?
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much. I would ask in a minute to have Michael Lamb come up, our CFO, that's in charge of doing our debt. But just very quickly, I want to state, so the board knows up front, these steps that you have to go through on a conduit bond are very complicated. This step that we're doing right now is sort of laying the foundation of moving forward. This is, and Deputy Commissioner, you've been involved in these. This step right now is just the ability to set a time frame for the IRS of when project expenditures can be reimbursed. By approving this resolution, the board isn't saying that we will issue this conduit bond or that we'll move forward with the conduit bond. This is just a procedural step so that if you move forward with the bond, you can go back to this date to include expenditures in being paid by the proceeds of the bond. So it gives you a back door to go backwards to use expenditures being made from this date on. And again, really quickly, the Chair, if you would like, I could have Michael Lamb that could come up and answer any of the technical questions.
All right.
On this.
And thank you.
Go from there.
Michael?
Mr. Chair, Michael Lamb for the record. I think the executive director gave a nice summarization. I might just add, if I could, that there are really two things the resolution is doing, which is authorizing, basically declaring the official intent as required by the IRS to go back 60 days for a look-back period to get reimbursed. And this particular organization actually wrote a check on June 30th, so their clock started ticking as relates to being able to go back. And the other thing that this resolution does is to give authorization to the executive director to sign the memorandum agreement on the basic points that would be agreed to between ADA and the organization to do the bond. If you want, I can go through more detail, but the short of it really is that nothing can move forward without it coming back to the board. This really is more of an IRS compliance documentation that there's reasonable intent that the board would move forward with this, which is part of one of the programs they have. So I'll just leave it with any questions.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Are there any questions for board members? I do have one, Michael. Is there a roadmap, you know, for some of the newer board members on conduit bonds in the process that we could get to the board as far as all the steps?
I'll see what I can find. I mean, surely if there isn't, we can create something and obviously want you to be informed. And,
yeah.
And they're a little bit somewhat different. The last bond that we didn't have the circumstance because when we did that particular bond for the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, did the money and then did the project. In this instance, where you're trying to preserve the tax-exempt status, so this is a step that wasn't even in the other one. So, but the short of it is we can get you something and we'll figure out whatever you need to answer your questions and understand the process.
Great. Thank you. Gary?
So just for the record, Alaska, AK Bev Group is Alaskan Brewing Company. And I would like very much to, at this juncture and in future times, to support their efforts. These folks whom I personally know, my son worked for them for 5 years as Alaskan Brewing Company. They're straight up people running a business the way people should run businesses, and Alaska should be very proud. So I would like to vote yes, but at the same time, they are. I am an investor in the craft brewery in Fairbanks, so there might be some thought that perhaps there's a conflict of interest. And I just throw that to the board. If you think there is, then I'll abstain or recuse myself. But I don't think that's the issue, and I just ran it by Jerry just top of the thumb with him, and he thinks I'm okay. So I would just ask the indulgence of the board to allow me to vote, unless there's a concern. I intend to vote yes if allowed to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Michael?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to comment on your request to Michael that those type of things, I think, aren't just important for the new board members, but also for the public, having those charts that walk through the steps. I think that'd be good anyway to have them.
Okay.
Go on the website.
Yeah. Unless I hear otherwise, I see no reason why the member Wilkin should be allowed to vote on the resolution.
Thank you.
All right. Is there any other discussion, Ted, on the resolution?
None from staff.
All right, Chair. So the question is before us. Bryn, would you please poll the board?
Okay. Mr. Wilkins?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Pawlowski?
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard?
Yes.
Commissioner Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Dix?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carries.
I'd like to vote yes.
Oh, did I skip you?
Well, I said pass, but then we can come back to this. So I vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is the Interior Energy Project update.
Yes, Chair. We have the MWH with us again to give us an update on where we're at with the project, and they have a very quick PowerPoint, which is, I think, one slide, and then Chris and Rick were going to work off that slide and give you an update.
All right. And Corinne, is that online? Do you know if we got it online?
Sherry texted me. It is online.
Thank you. Gentlemen, welcome. Please state your name again for the record. Your affiliation.
Thank you. Chris Brown, MWH.
And Rick Adcock, MWH.
Chris?
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to Ada. We're glad to be here. A lot has happened since the last update we gave back in June, including a lot of very recent development. We'd like to give an update of where we are. It's going to be relatively brief, but we'll highlight some of the things that have happened. I'll go into the primary things that we want to present to you and describe the updates in a minute. We'll speak to the schedule slide. But before we do, there are a couple of comments, themes that we would just like to kind of reiterate that hopefully will come out during the presentation, but we want to make sure that they are clear. One of the very critical things about this project, in order to maintain schedule, is to keep it going and the work that they're doing, including engineering and procurement work. That is critical to maintain. If we're going to deliver in third quarter 2016, that's very important that we continue to keep them going. The other one is that MWH is very much desires to get into a signed concession agreement with the board or with ADA. We believe that is necessary for a variety of reasons, including standing for negotiation of off-take agreements. It triggers some of the core due diligence activities of our investor, and it has implications for discussions in the gas supply agreement that we're contemplating using through Boulder Valley. I also want to acknowledge that we've received a request from ADA to provide information on timing of funding commitments, ADA funding commitments, development cost estimate certainty, and other decision points. We're in very close discussion with ADA staff to provide that, and it is forthcoming. With that, I'm going to pause here and look at my colleague. Is there any other?
No, I think everybody's pretty current on where we are. The critical thing in terms of the concession agreement and getting that moved forward, and hopefully by the next board meeting, which we consider very critical, is to give us that standing, as Chris said, to go out and work with the community to negotiate those off-take agreements, to get that gas supply in place, to get all the commercial agreements in place you're going to be required to keep this project on schedule. So we know you're thinking about that. You're going to be considering it, and we consider it a very important and a time-sensitive thing. So
Rick, on the concession agreement, tells me that I thought the concession agreement was going to be signed at financial close. Did I miss something on that?
I think that the concession agreement would be signed in the near term. And as Chris said, that triggers a lot of activities that are required for financial close. So once we get the concession agreement, which is not the end of the deal, the end of the deal is at financial closing. Concession agreement just gives us the mandate and the standing to go out to negotiate offtake agreements with FMG and Golden Valley and IGU, and to work with BP or whoever we're working with on the gas supply agreement, and to get those commercial agreements lined up. You need those commercial agreements in place, an agreement on the financial modeling and the pricing that we're going to get, and the EPC contract and the operations contract and everything else that's going to be required to make this project happen, including the investor due diligence and investor committee approval to get the financial closing. And that's all that happens between the signing of the concession agreement and financial closing, which we're targeting for the fall.
Okay.
If I may, Chair, there are conditions precedent to closing that are embodied in the concession agreement as well that have to be satisfied prior to closing. So even though the concession agreement would be signed before that, there are a number of conditions that would have to be fulfilled to meet the variety of them to the agreement of the parties. And so perhaps that's where it becomes, those things come in, and the concession agreement might say it's finalized at closing as those conditions precedent come in, but the actual initial signing happens.
Yeah, if I could even summarize those in terms of the mutual conditions precedent to financial close. We have a few people joining who may actually contribute as well. But the mutual conditions precedent to financial close include the financial agreements with the investor, with third-party financiers, et cetera, the project agreements like the gas supply agreement, the off-take agreements, the site lease, O&M agreement, the EPC agreement, the base case financial model, which has to be reasonably acceptable to both parties, and the trucking and storage issues have to be settled commercially.
So do you anticipate, or can you foresee, asking, looking in the future, that anything between the signing of a concession agreement and financial close could actually affect the concession agreement, change something in it, and how would you, if it did, how would you propose to address it?
The short answer is I think the concession agreement anticipates potential changes and allows us to integrate those into the final terms of the deal. I don't know if one of those who just joined may have been Kent Rowley, but I'm not sure if he's on.
Hi, Rick. Yeah, this is Kent here.
Yeah, did you hear Chair's question?
I think so. Yeah, I think the question is, between signing, and correct me if I didn't get it all, but it sounded like the question is, in between signing the concession agreement and financial close, if circumstances change with respect to the project during that period, how does the concession agreement handle that? Does it
correct.
Require
correct.
Amendments? Is that the gist of the question?
That's right. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the concession agreement, I heard Rick describe it as set up in a pretty customary way with conditions precedent to each party's obligations. And until those conditions occur, then the parties don't have any obligations other than to reimburse each other if they walk away from the project. And then there's kind of a soft obligation to cooperate. Otherwise, all of the unresolved matters concerning the project, for example, the form of the EPC contract, the form of the trucking arrangements, et cetera, all of those things are conditions precedent, and the condition precedent is specifically that each party has to approve those matters. And if they don't approve them, then the condition isn't fulfilled and the parties aren't obligated to go forward. So it's kind of a long-winded answer, but what really happens is that some of the unknowns, which are still being developed in parallel with, you know, negotiating the concession agreement and post-signing the concession agreement, the parties would just have to have a discussion about it and, you know, behave in good faith. But otherwise, you know, there's no liabilities or no obligations arise other than just to act in good faith and to negotiate if there are issues on the conditions precedent.
Okay.
Michael? Mr. Chair, I think I might ask that a little more pointedly, a little differently, in that if there are outcomes in the development of these conditions precedent that change the financial architecture of the concession agreements, ADA and MWH have the ability mutually to either amend or expand the agreement. Is that what I'm hearing? Without upsetting the concession agreement.
So technically speaking, I don't want to get hyper-legal here, but there would be no need to amend because the concession agreement doesn't hardwire any particular results or outcome in for the unresolved matters. It's simply an approval right. So take the case of the EPC contract. Once the EPC contract has been negotiated with Kiewit, and there's an agreed price, then with Kiewit, then that's presented to ADA, and then ADA has to approve it. If ADA doesn't approve it, then that condition is fulfilled, and nobody's bound by the contract. Other than, again, to sit down and have a discussion to negotiate in good faith, if there's a difference of opinion as to whether, you know, the EPC contract is in the form that it needs to be or whether it's economic. But in effect, it's sort of a, you know, it's a walk-away ride. Essentially, other than to behave reasonably. But you don't need to amend the contract. The agreement provides just a simple approval right on behalf of either party.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions on the concession agreement portion of the schedule update from the board members?
Are you done with this?
No, we're going to go into
the whole of it.
Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to make kind of some preliminary comments.
Thanks.
Yeah, if it's okay with the chair, or we can
go ahead.
Move along. I'm going to advance the slide here. So this is the slide that we'd like to speak to and giving an update. I'd like to start at the top, the IEP system integration part, and describe what's been happening there, and then we'll work our way down. The plan was that in July we would receive draft recommendations from the IEP working group, the technical working group, about the most efficient, lowest cost way to operate the IEP as a whole, down to storage and regas. That occurred. Those recommendations were arrived at, but just very recently, some things have occurred that have changed some of the assumptions and some of the information that they're working with. And that has to do with the level of collaboration between the utilities on the areas of trucking and storage. And the efforts have to get the utilities working together has been spearheaded by Corey Borgeson, our JV partner, the CEO of Golden Valley. And with your permission, I'd like to see if he's on the
line. Dan Britton's in the room with us too, and Dan's been extremely constructive in the discussions that we've had over the last month or so.
Okay.
So trying to move that forward collectively with the community.
Yeah, yes, and if with your permission, if Corey's on the line, I would ask him to speak to the things he's been doing.
Sure. Go ahead.
Corey, are you on the line?
Yeah, I am on the line. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you. Can you speak a little bit about what's been going on with the utilities?
And Corey, Dan is here too, so I think
I'd like to ask Dan to come up to the table for us.
That'd be great. And I'll just say a few comments and Dan can add to it. We've had a couple of meetings now at utilities with representatives from IGU, Dan Britton with FNG and Golden Valley. Talking about common issues that we need to resolve here in order to go forward on this project, which centered around other offtake agreements, centered around the regas, the storage, and the trucking component of this project. And we kind of talked about having some type of consortium of the three of us getting together. We kind of gave them a nod to that. No agreements, no understandings, but just kind of a gentleman. Discussion about how we might create some synergy with the three utilities working together. We've asked NWH to start developing some documents that would include the business plans, forms of organization, things like that to get this moving forward, to get going past the discussion phases. But I don't want to commit to anyone other than going back at this point that we are very serious about working with FNG and IG. I'll let Stan wants to speak, let him speak to that. We actually think the session probably will work better in that part of the project.
Thank you, Corey. Dan?
Yeah, I think things are pretty preliminary. I mean, we have been meeting all along. We felt pretty strongly that integration and coordination of the basically all three aspects of the project, the liquefaction, the trucking, the storage, and the delivery are going to be critical. So we recognize that to the extent that the parties can work together to provide support to one another, we're open to. I think we're, as I said, it's pretty preliminary discussions, and it's good that they're being had, and hopefully they can result in something meaningful.
Great. Good. Any comments, questions from the board? Well, I would like to encourage the parties to continue to work together and obviously get to a good finish line that for the benefit of the residents and users of the interior in Fairbanks. Appreciate the parties coming together and MDA and NWH is facilitating that. So anything we as ADA can do to help, we offer our assistance. Gary?
Well, could we just take a little sidebar here? We have the privilege of having Dan at the table. Could you, Dan, talk about a couple things? Tell us just the status on the storage tank and where you are. And then the other thing is, I'll just tell you that you can't drive around town without running into a ditch witch. So they're putting some black pipes in the ground. And it's very evident, and that kind of goes to the mayor, because including my neighborhood that I just sold my house last year because oil prices were too high. But I mean, they're there, they're visible, they're right in the heart of town putting pipe in. So let's just talk a little bit about what you're doing, what you've done, and the status of your your storage tank?
Sure. So the storage project, we just we sent out a request for rebid on the project and received those pricing indications back in late July. The project is still, I think, within the economic scope that we're looking to. It is coming in a little bit higher, so we're having some discussions with the bank on that right now. But with all of our preliminary engineering and everything is holding strong. We've received our final geotechnical report that supports the foundation designs for the construction. So we look forward to getting that moving soon. The distribution work, I think if you'll recall, we had planned to do approximately 30 miles in the 2014-2015 time frame. We've got about 15 miles completed already year to date, summer, with additional mileage coming on very quickly. We've got, we brought on about 30 to 40 seasonal staff in-house, completing quite a bit of the work in-house. And we've also brought on two contractors in Alaska that have a significant experience working with NSTAR. So both contractors are actively working. Our crews actively working. We've got crews probably in four or five different neighborhoods at the same time. As you said, Gary, we've completed quite a bit through a lot of neighborhoods. We're using directional drilling to the greatest extent possible to try and minimize our impact. But we're still disrupting people's neighborhoods, but we're trying to do it as quickly and efficiently as we can. So it's been great getting a lot of pipe in the ground.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right. Any questions or comments from other board members while we have Corey and Dan with us? Corey, thank you again. Dan, thank you again for putting this effort. Appreciate the
You're welcome.
Everybody working in the same direction.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chris?
Thank you, Chair. Just to transition off of the IEP system integration and into EPC, just one last comment. We, as Corey, kind of as the facilitator for that group and our connection to him, through our connection to him, we anticipate supporting that group for the things that they need, be it technical information, helping provide drafts of MOUs, commercial documents, business plans, as Corey mentioned, and that those efforts are going on right now.
In fact, I think we have term sheets as we're taking up to Fairbanks this week for the trucking and storage consortium. So we prepared those.
Yeah, so we're moving ahead to, as you can see on the schedule, the trucking and storage procurement bar, that orange colored bar, it kind of starts right there at the end of July, signifying kind of news that there's at least preliminary willingness for the utilities to work together. The intent is that over the course of the next couple of months, that effort will result in a approach and plan for trucking and storage that will be sufficient for financial close. That's currently, and it will be largely driven by the utilities facilitated by Corey and supported by MWH and ADA, I guess, for that matter. Yeah. Moving down to the EPC procurement and early works, we were anticipating receiving indicative cost information from QN on July 11th, which we did. We went through a validation process. The intent was to have a validated number later in July 18th, we had to go through an additional step, a value engineering step, as part of that that we hadn't anticipated. We went through that with participation of ADA and their representatives, QIT, our technical representatives. I think it was a pretty successful effort. We are not, because of that effort, though, we are not quite ready to discuss particular EPC costs, but hope to be in a position to do that very soon.
When would you anticipate being able to talk about that?
Certainly no later than the board meeting later this month.
Okay.
Hopefully sooner.
Okay.
Now that effort, coupled with the timing of authorization for Kiewit to move forward on their phase two efforts, have pushed back the receipt of final contract and target price information. So at this point, we anticipate that closing is now going to be on or about November 21st. That is not to say that we are projecting at this time a change in the delivered schedule for gas, but that the closing date has changed. I do need to note, though, that to preserve the third quarter 2016 delivery date, like we mentioned earlier, we do need to stay on schedule. And that includes moving on with the procurement of long lead items. It's an issue that's on the critical path. We're in very close discussions with ADA about it, but it's something that we need to get done if we intend to have first gas at that time. One other comment. Why don't I pause there before moving into a discussion about operations procurement. If there are no questions, on the operations side, we received a request from the proposers to extend the proposal deadline by 2 weeks, which we granted. We anticipate receiving the proposals on August 15th, and then going through a selection process and arriving at a contract mid-next month. And then that will result in an effort to develop the final cost for operations.
And Gary and Chris, so define for me, what do you mean by operations procurement?
To the procurement of an entity who will provide North Slope operations services on contract to the project.
So an operator?
Yes. The procurement of an operator.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions about that? You have to bear with me. I periodically have to check my notes here and make sure I cover everything. I'll move on then. The offtake agreements are in progress. I think we've had conversations with all the utilities as well as other potential offtakers, but I'm going to actually pass.
We got term sheets that we're distributing this week in our meetings in Fairbanks for the offtake agreements and starting to discuss that with the three utilities. Obviously, this is critical in terms of what kind of demand they're going to require and what the timing of that is. All that needs to be sequenced back to the plant and the capacity of the plant and the storage, et cetera. So it's all interlinked, as everybody knows. In addition to the three utilities, we're talking to other off-takers, potential off-takers, including industrial off-takers and Department of Defense off-takers. So that is on track and will be, like I said, progressing this week in the term sheet negotiations with the three utilities.
Do you see any stumbling blocks or any issues with the utilities as far as getting an uptake agreement that would be commercially acceptable?
Not at this time, really. I mean, it's all going to depend on their level of demand. F&G, of course, has several sources of supply and needs to, make their own business decisions about, what level of demand they'll be taking. But we're obviously trying to fill capacity as quickly as possible because that makes the plant operate more efficiently and that lowers gas prices to Fairbanks. So the more demand that we can get lined up on those initial take or pays, the better for everybody.
There is one thing that's of import in order for any off-taker to enter into an agreement, a credible agreement to buy gas on a take or pay basis. They have to be you know, creditworthy, basically. And so that's one thing that's important for all off-takers that we consider, is that they have the financial backing, balance sheet, parental entity guarantees, if needed, in order to have a creditworthy agreement.
That's New York participant.
Yeah.
Typical day in New York.
I thought it was just because what I was saying was so important.
Yeah.
But that's obviously an issue with IGE, so we're going to need to work through that. And we've got some ideas. It could be some collaboration amongst the off-takers for that, but we all know that that's an issue that we have to address.
The IGU off-take agreement?
Exactly. Because when the investor does their due diligence, they've got to make sure that that's a creditworthy entity standing behind that agreement. And that's going to be challenging initially. But the investor knows that that's the situation.
All right.
It's going to require some sort of creative solution.
Are you able to say to whom you're speaking about that issue? Because, I mean, that is a gorilla.
It is a real gorilla. I mean, the good news is that their offtake in the early years is relatively small.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Starts at 0.3
BCF out of a 6 BCF total capacity. So, you know, in that regard, it makes it easier to resolve. But, of course, their growth trajectory is greater than anyone else's. So if they continue to meet that growth trajectory, then that's going to become a much more significant issue. The good news on that is that if they're meeting that growth trajectory, they're starting to have the revenue flows to make them more creditworthy as an off-taker. So, you know, it's sort of like getting past that first hump, that first year or so, and they're just a 0.3 BCF off-taker to make sure that that can be sufficiently guaranteed for the investors' criteria.
So you're having active discussions with IGU, I would assume.
Yeah, definitely. With IGU and with Golden Valley. Golden Valley will be the largest off-taker initially, I believe.
But in regard to the creditworthiness, you're having discussions with IGU about that?
Yes.
Everything's on the table?
Everything's on the table.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
The term sheets contain credit statements about, you know, creditworthiness, mm-hmm. and I believe it's in the we've been exchanging during the negotiations with ADA on the concession agreement. We've been exchanging various schedules or attachments, and the term sheet is one of those attachments that's included in the draft concession agreement that ADA has.
So Ted, to what extent is ADA involved in that discussion of the creditworthiness of IGU?
Currently, again, we're just, as Chris said, being advised of what's going on through that.
Okay.
ADA does not have the tools, except we're looking at capital financing, that maybe there's some way that we could assist. But right now, per statute, with the SETS funding, we don't have the ability to provide that backup.
Who's the person on our team that is responsible for that issue?
With the Mark Davis and
Mark
Simone.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
On your off-take agreement schedule here, obviously there's a line item, the vertical line that shows, you know, where we're at today, and then at the end it shows a close just a little, maybe a week before the November 21st anticipated financial close date on the final for the off-take agreements. And so that's a long time. I would think that we would need to have a little more detail on, I mean, at the end of the day, there's a lot of things going to be happening, and I don't know what the ultimate ramifications of the IGU non-financial viability on the last or middle of November, finding out then. I mean, is there some way that we, the schedule can be, lack of a better term, focused on a little bit more and more milestones put into it?
You bet. Absolutely. And you're absolutely right about that, Chair.
Yeah, and if I may say, this graphic presents a greatly simplified schedule. There are a number of intermediate milestones, and there, in many cases, the milestones occur when information or milestones in other areas are met, and then those contracts or the information generated in other areas flow down to the take or pay agreement task and inform the discussions. And so I apologize that it's not more clear here. It's just been simplified for purposes of the meeting to make it easier to understand. But certainly, you make a very good point, and it's absolutely something that is part of our more details.
In the very near term, the term sheets will be put in place, and in parallel with that, a solution to this issue is going to have to be, you know.
When would you say that solution has to be in place on the schedule?
Well, technically, when it has to be in place would be prior to financial close.
Right.
But optimally, it's going to have to be in the late September, early October time frame at the latest, I'd say.
Okay.
Again, the good news to keep in mind about that is that it's a 0.3 BCF offtake initially, so the relative risk to the investor is minimized because of that. But that said, we'll need a solution.
Well, so that was going to lead me right into my last question on that, and that is the ramifications if the IGU economic issue is not resolved. What does that do to the program?
We'll model this and work with the investor, but you have to look at the risk to cash flows that they're going to be looking at based on IGU's failure to hold up to the terms of their purchase agreement, if that were to transpire. And again, because of the relative amount of cash flow associated with IGU to the other off-takers is so small, it minimizes that risk. That's not to say that we don't need a solution to it, but
it starts off, but at the end of the day, eventually it's got to play into amortizing the volume over everybody to keep the cost down.
You got it.
Right? And so I mean, I guess what I'm getting to, the more financial risk that your folks would take, is that going to drive up the return, which drives up the cost to everybody?
The short answer is I wouldn't anticipate it. Driving up the return unless they were forced to take a much riskier project.
Well, that's what I mean. If the IGU is risky, if it's risk, what I call a risk capital, deal with it, is that going to drive their rate of return that Northleaf would like to see go up higher, which would drive the cost up to all the utilities and the users in the IEP project?
I would say that in theory that's absolutely right, but I would say in practice it isn't something we've been considering, and rather we think that we can find a solution to IGU's creditworthiness. I know if Corey's still on there or not, but I know that he's been working on this issue, anticipating it for the better part of a year. Are you there, Corey? Maybe not. I know.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Corey.
Yeah. I had worked on this. We held a meeting with the borough mayor, and Ted Leonard came to this, and in an effort to somehow realize that IGU was going to need somewhat of a balance sheet in order to be considered a viable credit risk. And hopefully that's better. And so I am. Yeah, we had talked about using the $7.5 million as part of the grant to go to IGU. We talked about the borough providing some funding, and what really came from those efforts was the loans. Really, the borough has loaned IGU money, and Ada has loaned IGU money, but that does not really help their creditworthiness. So I think this is an area that I still think is a problem that has to be solved, and I'm kind of I don't have the ready answer for you on this, but I think it's going to take a backstop to somebody for this obligation of IGU.
So, Corey, in your estimation, would the borough be a logical backstop?
In my estimation, they were a logical backstop, and some of the grant money that's there also be provided to IGU or be used as a backstop. That to me seems logical.
but not to everybody else.
Okay.
Michael? Mr. Chair, MWH might be able to answer this, but if grant money was set aside as a backstop, then wouldn't that grant money not be available to drive down the cost in other parts of the project?
Exactly. Yeah. If something is not used, you know, to... Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And this may be... Correct me if I'm wrong, but what I understand about these projects is often you see the same sort of integration happen in the offtake agreement with a consortium coming together to handle the offtake so you can swap molecules through the early stages of deliverability and handle different needs. Is anybody pursuing that sort of integration, or are we still very much looking at individualized offtakes?
You put your finger on it. Okay. And I can't speak for the utilities because that's their decision to make amongst themselves, but that's absolutely right. You know, in the case of some utility offtakers, they've got several options available to them, and so yep. switching between different sources is an option, but that's a business decision they're going to have to make. But that could facilitate the backstopping that you're talking about.
Gary?
Well, what does 0.3B mean that someone would have to have in their balance sheet to be creditworthy? Is it 1 million? Is it 20 million? Just a range.
Just cash.
Yeah.
We can get that for you. What's 0.3B?
We're talking big dollars or little dollars?
We're talking relatively small dollars.
300 MCF times whatever.
Whatever. Right.
Okay, just
to rough it out.
Glenn's got it. We'll
get
it.
Okay,
come back to that. Thank you.
And it's 300 for how long?
Yeah, that's the
price. Yeah, it keeps climbing from there.
That's more than 5 million.
5 million?
A million for the 3.3 chair, but that would go up.
Okay. And the growth profile over the first like 5 to 10 years, from 0.3 goes up.
I mean, in their projections, it goes up fast. That's getting pipe in the ground, and that's contingent on other things. But I think within you know, a couple of years, they're up above one.
So that would be closer to 3.
Okay. Can I get your name for the record? Amy Broaden from MWH.
And then, Chair, you'd have to model how much you truly believe that they will get based on a base case demand, too. It wouldn't need to be the full 1.3. BCF, I want to think.
Right.
So the start out are two numbers. The 0.3 is 1 million or 5 million?
1 million.
Exactly.
Plus or minus. Sorry.
Yeah.
There is also the opportunity to use other off-takers to fill in that wedge in the initial years.
And that's it. Okay. Mr. Pulaski is talking about that.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Yeah,
sorry, Bart, if I got one more moment.
Okay, Corey.
I just want to point out, too, that this financial viability of the off-takers is also going to apply under our gas contract. And that's something where Golden Valley's in the middle. It's our risk, and we've certainly been told by the gas supplier that the extent that gets shifted or anyone else, that they're going to be looking at the financial viability of making sure that they get paid. So it's not only the investor for the Northern Lights energy, it's also going to be an issue for the gas supplier.
Okay. Correct, Gary?
Other questions on this?
Well, they're going to go, they're going to go down to the next line item down.
Okay.
That's, if that works.
Sure.
Okay.
So commercial agreements, as you see, the first one on the list is concession agreement. And again, from where we sit, that's the mandate standing to go negotiate all these other commercial agreements that we've been talking about. So once that's in place, then we're the concessionaire, and we can go out and put those agreements in place. And I know there's going to be a lot more discussion about that. Other commercial agreements which will be negotiated over the next 6 to 8 weeks include the joint development agreement with Golden Valley and Northleaf that will be the basis for the formation of Northern Lights Energy, the gas supply agreement, which was just alluded to, and All those are obviously necessary to get to financial closing. And then we have closing there at the in mid-November when everything else has been is lined up and ready to go. So there's a lot of parallel efforts going on right now, a lot more activity going on in Fairbanks and Anchorage, and which is a good thing. And hopefully a lot to be achieved over the next next couple of months.
Okay. Are there any questions from the board on Rick or Chris's schedule update?
I got a question.
Crystal?
Can you kind of explain what we can expect for your operations procurement? You spoke about an entity, but can we expect to see one or two options? Operations is critical to keeping that cost affordable or cheap, whatever word you want to use. So what can we expect? Can we expect just one entity to give us a price, or can we expect the market to engage and give us multiple options?
Well, right now we're on a path to select an operator based on their experience, qualifications, and their inherent ability to provide fairly unique services in a pretty unique environment. Normally, in order to get a pricing as part of that, we would have to have more information about what it is that they were going to operate. So these two efforts are kind of the development of the plant and the procurement of the plant itself and the operator are stacked on top of each other and working in parallel. Ideally, you'd have to know much more about the plant than the operator could understand better what it is they were operating in order to give you
right.
a price. So that's we're going to select an operator and then work with them to develop a target price as shown here. That's the path we're on right now.
And you were specifically asking about whether we have competition. And,
yeah.
and knowing that this is an open table, we don't want to tell the competitors everything they want to know, yes, there's competition right now.
Okay.
I've got more than one.
Yeah, we have multiple interested parties.
Will the pricing be transparent?
Yes. I feel pretty comfortable in saying that it's a...
That would be our working assumption.
Yeah.
Gary?
Thanks. Not sure how to word all this about my question, but I guess my my concern here, and what pops into my head is some close coupled. I don't understand from the chart here. We look out in November, week 1, 2, 3, and 4. Week 3 is financial close. But when I look up, I don't understand how you can do a takeoff or offtake agreement with the three entities without knowing the costs. Now, we're not going to know the trucking and storage until week 2 of November. Is that what that says? The orange bar?
Yeah, the orange bar is meant to indicate that there will be a plan in place to satisfy the offtakers, that they are going to be able to, if they sign an offtake agreement, they're going to know where their gas is going to go and how it will be trucked, and it will need to be to the satisfaction of the utility or the investor that that there is a viable plan mm-hmm. in place.
So that is, by this chart, is a no later than week 2 of November. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, then let's go down into EPC. Kiewit has said to you, to us, that they will have the feed by the end of October, which I assume is the first red square. So we don't know what the cost of that plant is, and nor the cost to operate it until the first week in November. Is that the way I read that?
For costs that you would associate with firm contract commitments, the process also includes the development of indicative costs that were developing now that as you go, it provides you certainty that you're on the right track to get to where you want to go. And so you describe a range to potential off-takers, and if the when you get to the end, if the price does not fall within that range, then there's a reopening of the discussions. That's kind of the theory and how that works.
So, Chris, that number will come to us, or the range, the first week in November? By this chart?
We intend to have contracts in place, so not really at that point there wouldn't be ranges.
When does Kiewit give to you their numbers from their work, the feed numbers?
We have so let me back up just a little bit. We have initial estimates from them now that were talking with Ada and others to make sure they're refined and validated to the point we like, and those are we'll know those. We'll have those before the end of this month is our current plan, and then Kiewit will continue on and continue to refine that cost, and that refinement will ultimately result in a contract price as shown on the schedule in November.
Okay.
And so there's kind of check-ins along the way is the point.
Right. And as we talked about Trumpet.
Exactly, okay. the Trumpet theory. Right. And way that the we're working through a process that is designed to, I would say, mitigate and hopefully prevent surprises to the upside that will... as refinement goes, that will result in a more certain and ideally a lower cost. There's no guarantees of that, but there would be a surprise. That's something that anybody can guarantee. But certainly we've tried to work through and design a process that maximizes the probability that will, as time goes by, there'll be visibility about price ranges and then ultimately a price that is within that range that was identified earlier.
Okay. So those are three things that will happen the 1st of November. And then the fourth is the cost of distribution, which we've just had a plug number on Friday, and I've asked Ted to validate that and start to zero in on really what it's going to cost to distribute both IGU and FNG, because that has to get added on to what we've seen, obviously. And there's some discussion as to what that might be. So two things. It seems like there's got to be somewhere in this chart, there has to be a go-no-go. There has to be a sanctioning meeting that says, yep, this is a project, and the price of gas at the meter for the person in North Pole is going to be X. From that discussion, the family that sits at the table to decide, because what we learned Friday was this is driven by operating expense at the plant and demand. So if those folks choose not to change because of a gas price that doesn't entice them, we have a dead project. And better to find it out at that sanctioning meeting than to find it out when nobody shows up at the table to sign up. So I'm looking for the go, no go here. Now, obviously, the 21st of November is a go, no go.
It's the kind of the ultimate building.
Yeah, but rolled into that by this chart, there's no discussion about the distribution cost. There's no all-in cost of what it's going to be. We saw the number on Friday. We added another number and said, yeah, okay, that's where we are, which was, an okay number. But if all of these costs come in the 1st of November and each of them just fudges a little, distribution costs aren't what we think they are, or they're too high. This thing cascades over a period of 2 or 3 weeks, and you don't get to the 21st because everything is shoved together to Thanksgiving. And it shouldn't. That bothers me, and maybe it doesn't bother professionals that do this all the time. But I don't know how this works, and I don't know how offtake agreements can be signed up for without trucking, storage, plant, and distribution. Those costs being known within a reasonably accepted range. So help me through that.
I think that your rationale is completely accurate. You need to think of it that way, and I agree with you. And you're right about the process that you go through to get to more certainty on each of these cost items. And I don't know if Kent's still on the line too, but I think he may have some examples of, you know, typical projects he's worked on in the past where the development of that project has proceeded along a path like this. Are you there, Kent?
Yeah, hi, Rick. Sorry, I was trying to fiddle with my mute button so you guys wouldn't hear any more police sirens in the background. yes, so the process that we're going through now is, in one sense, unusual because, you know, we're project financing the asset, and, you know, ordinarily you would have all your cost inputs in before you would start negotiating price with off-takers. Having said that, it is also not unusual to run that process in parallel. And the way it would work contractually is that you could sign an off-take agreement and, you know, again, you would build in conditions precedent that would have price parameters in them. And if you exceed those price parameters, then the off-takers would have a choice about whether they wanted to go forward or not. By developing a project with a lot of work streams running in parallel, that's the customary way to handle it. You know, you build in some room to maneuver by putting these parameters in, and if you stay within the parameters, then there's no need for people to sit down and have a discussion and try to figure out solutions to problems. On the other hand, if you exceed those parameters, then you have to sit down and renegotiate. The alternative, you know, is to set out a longer period of time. So, you know, this methodology has been adopted because of the need to get things done quickly and within a short time frame. And that's why things are kind of stacking up and things are running in parallel. But it's functional. I mean, it all basically works. It just means that the parties need to have some tolerance for uncertainty and rely on these contractual mechanisms, which allow people to put their hands up and say, wait, we need to have a discussion if we fall outside the parameters that we put into the contracts. And that would include, for example, in the case of the SPAs, pricing parameters.
And I believe it was Mr. Pulaski a couple of meetings back, two or three meetings back, just noting the challenge we had ahead of us in terms of negotiating all these commercial agreements at once. And as Kim just said, we're driven to that because of the schedule pressure that we're trying to operate under. So we're trying to meet the schedule demands that everyone knows are so critical to this project. And this is the way you have to do it.
Well, it just seems that, now let's just take off-take agreements. And I'm not going to ask Dan to say anything. He's nice enough to be here. I'm not going to put him on the spot. But let me just suggest, I don't know how 2 weeks, the second week in November, I'm asked to sign an off-take agreement. And I'm going to say, well, what's it going to cost? And a week later, we have the big event of the financial close. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me that, one, we need to know that red dot, what that cost is, including distribution, and we then need to roll that into some sort of a contract that's going to take more than 5 working days. I mean, am I just unrealistic, or should I...
Sorry, I was just going to sort of interrupt. I just wanted to clarify one point, which is the contract won't need to be negotiated in 5 days. The contract will basically be done. And, you know, again, you'll have, you know, these pricing parameters within which the final price has to fall. And there will be a mechanism, you know, some algebra that will determine what that is. But that should all be done well in advance of, I don't have the chart in front of me here, but... I mean, you know, there's no reason why that can't be done well in advance of that first week in November date. You know, it's not a question of we get the price for the EPC contract first week in November, then we go to the off-takers and negotiate a price, then we negotiate and sign a contract. All of this work is in development at the moment and will continue. And, in fact, will ramp up as we get closer to November. But by the time you get to those milestone dates, you know, everything should be done. It's not that, you know, you just, people are, have things sprung on them on that date and have to scramble around to make decisions around them.
And believe me, if we had our druthers, we would much prefer to string it out longer like you're talking about, but it's just, this project demands a very advanced time frame, and so in order to meet that schedule, we're working very hard with these parallel paths to make everything come together as quickly as possible.
The caller,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, I hate to interrupt, but on the telephone, we can't really tell who's asking questions. For instance, the Q&A is excellent, but could you have, for instance, is it Mr. Wilkins or Mr. Hughes that's asking the questions? I'm at a loss. Thank you.
That's scary. So that we had interjected here by the caller something called pricing parameters. So, and he's saying, well, we'll have those ahead of time, but how do you have them ahead of time when you're not asking for final numbers until the first week of November?
I think that gets back to the range that Chris was talking about, and you know, for both operations and for EPC, which will start with a wider range and it'll come together, as you've seen many times. And so as long as the final price comes within those parameters and all parties are agreed to that range, then everything's good, and if it falls outside the range, then that reopens the discussion.
Okay. And when, Rick, then, do you expect those pricing parameters to be put in place for people to look at on this chart?
We have embarked on a process that was intended to arrive at the range of costs for all the parameters up through storage and regas roughly by this time, by early August. There have been a couple of events that have delayed that by some weeks. The issues around having to put more effort into validating the EPC contract price, and the new information and new options and possibilities that are presented by the utilities cooperating more closely. So that's kind of, you know, there's a lot of good news there, but it has delayed our putting out ranges that we would then use to go and start, you know, discussions about what range the prices may fall in. We anticipate having those ranges clarified and established. It is our intent at this time to have it no later than the August board meeting, regular board meeting, which would be the 25th, and hopefully before.
And the operations numbers would come later, correct?
Well, we would still have a range. You know, we're still talking about ranges, and this is something that we are in very close discussion with data staff about, and you know, we'll bring them forward as quickly as we can, but certainly as responsibly as we can.
So, is the question to be answered then? The statement is, in August, we project that the price at flange, the output flange of the tank per MCF will be a high of this and a low of that. Is that what the statement will say?
That is our hope.
So FOB.
We're hoping to be able to enter discussions with the off-takers that require that kind of information, yes.
So then the piece that's missing, then, is the distribution piece, and you folks, we're deal with that.
We'll be talking to the very people who know the most about the distribution costs,
the
utilities themselves.
The uncertainty that's there is their uncertainty. So.
But the distribution costs won't be part of the off-take agreement.
Correct.
Well, it will be if the distribution cost is so high that the FNG and IGU can't think that they can't sell the gas.
Well, but that would be their decision on whether or not to sign an off-take agreement.
Because that's all downstream of where they would be purchasing the gas.
purchasing them.
Well, yeah, it's downstream, but it's that family at the table that decides whether they're going to switch.
You're absolutely right.
So it's just as big a number as any other. And if we're talking a spread today, what I know of a $1.50 to $9.50, the numbers I'm seeing, boy, if you dump $9.50 into this thing, we've got a problem.
Yeah, you're the distribution.
And we're going to work on the distribution.
And you're absolutely right about that. You're absolutely right about that. And that's, you know, the price that we're talking about is the FOB where the off-takers off-take.
Yeah,
and we can control everything up until there. But then downstream of that, that's something that they need to be able to judge. And you're absolutely right. The end consumer really doesn't matter to them. You know, it's all a system, and it all adds up to a bill at the end, and it has to come in at a number that is sufficient for them to want to convert.
If we learned anything on Friday, we learned that demand makes this thing work.
Absolutely. And, you know, in order to mitigate that kind of risk, too, that's why we're looking at other industrial off-takers that we could sell gas to, because the more of them that we can get signed up, the better the news in terms of making sure that the project works and we can get this over the first few years of pumps. I think it was a few meetings back we talked about the biggest challenge to this project is getting through the first 3 years or so. After that, assuming everything else is coming together, you can see how the system can work. Demand will grow, and you can economically deliver this gas. It's just getting through that first couple of year hurdle while everything's trying to get built and up and running at the same time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. Thank you.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, I do have one thought that I want to put out. One of the recent changes to the IEP that we mentioned earlier was the new possibilities and the new information that hopefully the utilities are going to come together and work, form trucking and storage consortiums and kind of lead that effort. And so up until that news broke, which was late in July, we had a certain, you know, we're making certain assumptions and moving along a path that included thoughts about trucking and storage that may or may not be valid anymore. And so when we talk about what the cost may be at the storage flange, I need to be very careful and point out clearly that they will have a lot to say about what those costs are because they're the ones who are going to be
potentially
coming together to form those consortiums. And so that's an important thing to point out too, that we're their input, their thoughts are going to be hugely important to any information that comes out in the future about cost of trucking and storage. So I don't want to overstate. I want to be careful that I don't overstate what we're able to identify as costs and not, you know, suggest that we can step into their shoes and make statements about pricing and things like that. That's no longer the case. If we continue down the path of them working together.
Good. Susan or Russell, are there any questions?
Sorry, I don't have any. Gary did a great job with his questions. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Susan?
No questions. Thanks for checking.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the board members? No? Not this time. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Ted, do you have any more updates that you want to give us on the IEP project?
Not at this time, Chair.
All right. Mm-hmm. At this time, I'll entertain a motion to the executive session.
I move that the board enter an executive session to discuss confidential information related to the interior energy project.
Second.
Thank you. Objectives, we are in executive session. We have a room, and does Russell and Susan have a number?
Yes, they have the number. Anybody who is involved in executive session has been emailed the number and the code.
Thank you. For the folks here or online, any thought as to how long it might last for their schedule.
I just thought it was our show.